Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me?
Good morning. I'm Dave Kubikian.
Good morning. I'm not Dave Kubikian.
Who are you?
I'm Kim Hance. I'm the famous one who just saw the car up on the guardrail.
You did. That's right.
Yeah, that was actually kind of scary.
Well, Kim and I are from the Herzog Law Firm, and we're here every weekend. We're not actually here every weekend, but we, in general, are here every weekend. And we're talking about estate planning and Medicaid planning, really important things. Sometimes we're talking about less important things. Try to keep it light. We'd love to take your questions, and you can call us at 518-476-5900. And it could be a question about a power of attorney or a question about a deed or a will, an estate issue, or you heard a rumor about something else. We're happy to talk about it. Kim, you witnessed, now let's get into this. On your way down here from the deep hinterlands.
The northern reaches.
The northern reaches of our state. So what exactly did you see?
Well, as I was coming in, there was a bit of a snow squall just before the Twin Bridges, and of course, people were braking, and I hate when people do that because that causes an accident, and then suddenly, I pass the northbound, and I see why people are braking, because there's this SUV promptly propped up on a guardrail,
and I will tell you that that accident has caused two more.
Really?
Yes.
Well, it doesn't surprise me.
Because people are just watching and they break and they forget.
That's right. Yeah. So two more right behind that. This happened at about 7:35. This next one came in at 7:55 and the next one came in at 7:59.
So,
bing, bang, boom, right there. You've got two accidents that are probably caused by those lights coming on and everything else this morning. So you got to be careful out there.
Well, and I just hope everybody's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I hope everyone's fantastic. However, I got to ask you guys, would you prefer to have a bunch of traffic and then there appears to be no reason for the traffic? Or would you, or do you feel better when there's traffic and there's a reason for it? Like there's a safe incident or there's a cop that pulled someone over? Because downstate where I'm from, it's just traffic for no reason, and then you get infuriated, and you're almost wishing there was something that happened.
Right, like an accident.
Nothing bad.
Right.
Am I a bad person, Ben?
No, absolutely not.
And that's so true, because, I lived in D.C. for a couple of years, and the traffic there is absolutely insane. And I'm from North Carolina, so anytime we make the drive, which is about once a year, you have to coordinate, so you're missing New York City, Washington, D.C., Richmond, Virginia, because they're all such high traffic hubs anymore. It's crazy. But I have to say, I think I feel better when there's nothing that happened, because there's always the,
you're so much nicer than me. It's so evident to everyone listening.
The thought of having somebody hurt or...
No, not hurt. Ignorance. That's not what I mean. Or it might be just a car,
a disabled vehicle.
Disabled vehicle or something.
Yeah.
Because I feel like if there's no reason, then that means that people are probably on their phones and then they're breaking.
That's true. That is very true. I actually think cars should be installed with a disabling. It just automatically disables your phone when you get in the car. I don't think people should be talking because I get distracted if I'm talking on the phone. I'm thinking about what I'm talking about and not necessarily about what's on the road.
And you're not a very good driver to begin with. So.
That's not nice.
Well, things are busy on the home front at the firm.
Indeed.
We are in our busy season. This is normally our busy season, the winter is, because people are not doing as hot. The weather a lot of times contributes to things. But it's also very busy because we've happened to had a lot of seminars, and we just got through a week of seminars that it was about wills versus trusts. It's one of our favorite topics to talk about because, Kim, it's a topic where a lot of misinformation, bad information, flat-out wrong information exists. And, we mentioned the phone number. We'd love to hear your calls. And Kim, whenever you're here, I want to always talk about the things that you do best and the community Medicaid and all that stuff. But I would like to, for a minute or two, talk about some of these questions I've gotten, if that's all right.
Well, yeah, of course.
Sure. So the topic was wills versus trusts. And Kim, this is going to be interactive, so we'll see how well you know your stuff.
How I can play
here.
Along.
Sure. Well, I'll play, you know, I'm going to quiz you here. So, obviously, the name of the game is, in general, creating an estate plan. And in some instances, that means real basic documents like a power of attorney or healthcare proxy. So that way, down the road, if you need more care, for example, Kim can speak to the right people, the right family members. You can contract with us or with managed long-term care providers or whoever on behalf of your loved one, right? You're using their money, their power, you know, their power of attorney to transact. And it could get into more, you know, traditional estate planning, which is essentially who gets what when you're not here anymore. Right.
But let's back up for a second, because this is one of the things that I think most people equate estate planning with being old, right?
Yes.
And in general, we say, yeah, you should have everything tied up by the time you're in your, you know, 50s or 60s. However, the big exception for the rule, and, you know, this is something that I preach the choir to my friends all the time, you know, middle age, we have kids that are, you know, ranging from 9, whatever, up to
maybe
college,
yeah.
Maybe, you know, even a little older. An estate plan is super important for those of us who have kids.
Yes.
Because people don't realize, I mean, people automatically think that if I'm, you know, if I get killed in an accident, it automatically just goes to, you know, my spouse or whatever, which it does. And
it might.
Correct. But then you have to think about this teenage child, right? And one of the things we always talk about is don't ever put your, like, I was just having conversation with friends last night and we were talking about this and I was asking them, like, who do you have as your beneficiaries? Number one beneficiary was husband. Number two beneficiary was kids. And I was like, no. Like, let's think about this.
You're stealing my thunder here, Kim. I love it. No, keep going. This is exactly
Because those of us who are in, you know, with young families, middle age, whatever, we're not really we're thinking that that's what makes sense. You just put your kid on as a beneficiary because you want to make sure your child is taken care of. What people don't realize is when that child turns 18, right, they're suddenly a lap full of money that they have no idea how to either manage or, you know, they're not really thinking about what to do with it.
They're an adult at 18. They could, in some states, they could buy a pack of smokes. They could vote. They could
buy a car.
They could
contract.
Lots of
things that they can do. And so as we were having a conversation around the dinner table last night, you know, I was also talking about, you know, from the perspective of if you want to protect your house, you know, the things that we can do as young families, young adults, and then maybe convert that plan later, right? But so often we get people that come in and have done nothing. They're in their 60s, 65, 70, even older. And they've been lucky.
They've been lucky, yes.
They've, you know.
1,000%.
So, sorry to steal your thunder.
No.
I really wanted to talk about that because so often it's just that everybody thinks estate planning is just for people when they get older. And it's really something the minute a child is born or you're bringing a child, you need to do estate planning then, particularly if you want to make sure that that child is taken care of. And so often it doesn't, that's a huge missing component, I think.
That's perfect.
You've got your little smile.
No, I got a little smirk. So yes, Kim, 1,000%. So, and we're going to go back to the powers of attorney and just basic healthcare proxies, why 18 and older, you got to have those documents. But let's talk about exactly what you said, which is most people will say, well, everything's going to go to my spouse and then everything I want to go to my kids. That is the basics of a very good estate plan.
Right.
Okay. Spouse and then kids. Something happens to my wife and I, it's all going to go to my kids. Yes. Now, literally, we don't want that to happen the minute that something happens to you and your wife, you and your spouse.
Right.
The reason why is because they may be young or they may not be young and they may be a knucklehead.
And still irresponsible.
Right. And they may be 30 years old and they're about to inherit $400,000, because guess what? When you and your spouse die, it's not just your house, it's not just your retirement accounts, it's not just your bank accounts, it's your life insurance, because you better have life insurance. So if you have a young child, and you, and really a child under, say, 18, and you don't have life insurance, and you don't have a will, get out a pad of paper and a pen and start writing down your to-do list. And it's not first get a will done, it's get life insurance done first, because we have a very long life that we're going to need to have to pay for, and schooling and this and that.
Right, right.
And so many people don't have that. Now, who is going to be the beneficiary on the life insurance? That's the question. That's the kind of question you brought up. But before we get there, we have Diana in Albany. Good morning, Diana. How are you?
Good morning.
What's up?
I wanted to talk about the fact that it's never mentioned, but, you know, couples, man and wife, can be killed in the same accident or something like that, and how we handle our monies.
Right.
It's absolutely possible. Sometimes it happens. You know, we try not to scare people. It's highly unlikely it's going to happen, but it might happen. And that's why, you know, we say, at least in the process of making sure everything goes to the right people at the right time, mm-hmm. that you plan in advance. And then it kind of, Diana, gets beyond just thinking about that stuff. You got to plan, and then you got to plan in a rather intelligent way, not in a way that's scary, but as Kim was talking about, we don't want people to name their I have a six-year-old daughter. She should not be my backup beneficiary on anything.
Right, but I'm just wondering, when you're setting up the plan, if it's worked out then.
It is. It is. So the way that we word our documents is that, for example, in our will, and this issue came up with a client who was signing their will actually 2 days ago, and they called the office and said, I think there's a mistake in our documents, because there's a paragraph in each of our wills that says that if we both die in a common disaster, where we can't determine who passed away first, it says we each predeceased one another. And they actually read the paragraph wrong. We actually have a section of our documents planned for this very event where we say, for whatever reason, the husband has predeceased the wife has survived the husband. So we're taking into account this scenario. And then in the beneficiary part of our documents, the who gets what part, it says everything to my spouse, perhaps, right? And then if my spouse predeceased me, everything to whoever, right? If it's the kids. And then if it's the kids, then we have two or three pages about language as to when those kids are going to get money.
I see.
And then it doesn't stop there, Diane. I'm going to keep going. And then we have another paragraph that says, but if it's going to my spouse and he's in a nursing home at the time, well, let's act as if he's not alive anymore. Let's act as if he predeceased me. So that way we're saving money there. And then there's more. If this is, I call it the knucklehead paragraph. There's a paragraph that says, if in the discretion of the executor or the trustee, this beneficiary is not ready to get a big pile of money, they have some options. The executor could pay bills for this person directly. It doesn't change who gets the money. You decide that, but it changes when. Because you're not here to say, well, wait a minute, I didn't know that so-and-so has a substance abuse problem. Well, if they have a gambling problem, I don't want them to take $100,000 and go to Rivers Casino, right? So we have language that prepares and deals with those scenarios.
Okay.
And a lot of times we talk about why it's probably not a good idea for people to get their estate documents done by filling out forms online. And this is one of the main reasons, is because a good estate plan, whether it's a will, a trust, a combination of the two, is going to take into account so many awful, things.
Yeah, okay. And that's put in your will?
Every time, yeah.
Okay. And what if you have no children?
It's whatever you want. So you tell me where everything's going to go.
Okay, fine.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
You know, it's quite a depressing process sometimes, Kim, when you meet with like Debbie or Jane Marie, Harry, myself, because I think I mentioned it a couple of weeks ago when I was on with Debbie. A young client of ours, her parents are clients, and she's, you know, the only under 30-year-old without a kid I've ever met that came into our office and got their will, healthcare proxy, and power of attorney done.
Mm.
And I was like, wow, that's great that you did it. So she came back in because she got married, and she's expecting a kid, and how exciting.
Right.
And we're talking about where you know what hospital and who's your doctor and you know talking. Yeah, my wife, you know, had a baby this year, so yeah. We were talking about it. And then I was like, all right, well, so who's going to take care of this baby if something happens to you and your husband? Now the baby hasn't been born yet, Kim.
Right.
And we're talking about that. Now I'm also talking about grandkids for her one day because right. Why not? Might as well talk about it.
Yep.
Might as well have a will that you don't have to change for 40 years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess that's the ultimate plan, right? Like from birth to death.
We don't want you to have to change your documents.
Right.
Well, if you want to change it as life changes, obviously update your things, but it sure would be. Sometimes we have clients who come in and they say, and they're so embarrassed, we haven't had this thing looked at since our, you know, we did it when our kids were 3, 6, and 8.
Yeah.
But guess what? They're not 3, 6, and 8 anymore. The document's fine in a lot of cases because, okay, so that language about holding it in trust for them doesn't apply, but the will still works.
Right.
The issue that we bring up in our wills versus trust seminars gets a little deeper. So, yes, we don't want your kids to get money at a young age. And we then have a big decision to make. It's like a fork in the road because we need rules on the money, right? A will has rules on how the money is going to pass, who it's going to go to, when it's going to go to them, how it's going to go to them.
Right.
But if you have a beneficiary on a retirement or you have a beneficiary on a life insurance or a beneficiary on a transfer on death TOD or pay on death POD on a bank account, it goes to people automatically. In our world, that's a good thing. That's avoiding probate. That's avoiding the courts. But it also avoids the rules that you set up in your will.
Yep.
So what do you do? Well, then it's okay. If we're just going to do a will, you decide just to do a will. And obviously there's a price difference between wills and trusts. And that's why a lot of times people opt just to do a will. Maybe they're younger. Usually that's the case. We say, all right, well, have a really good will with all these bells and whistles, all the language we just talked about with Diana. It's going to go to your spouse, then it's going to go to your kids. And if they're in a nursing home, skip them and this and that.
Right.
But then they need to go contact their life insurance broker and say, I need a change of beneficiary form. So they could direct the life insurance money to go first to spouse, second to the estate of Dave Kabikian, if it's me, right? So I get it to where the rules are. Because the rules are that important. And that's, if you do a basic will package, that's kind of what we're trying to do. We're sticking our nose in what else do you own? How do you own it? Who are the beneficiaries? Because you may have this great will, Kim, with all these rules and fantastic. But because, you know, $500,000 of life insurance didn't go through your estate, it ends up going to your daughter with no rules.
Right.
So she uses the money that has the rules as her security blanket, and she goes through the $500,000 and doesn't go to college and has a good 20s or whatever
age
she is.
Right.
So we just want a cohesive plan. And a lot of times, believe it or not, we're not very involved legally in the plan. There's not a lot of legal documents associated with the plan. Now, as you get older, that's the opposite, right? Mm-hmm. We get a lot more involved. If you want to be our second caller, you can call us at 518-476-5900. Again, it's Kim and Dave talking right now about wills, and we're going to get into trust in a little bit, but let's maybe do a little reprieve from that. I could see your eyes glazing over, Kim. A little bit.
No.
Yeah, we should talk quietly because Ben is still sleeping, so let's be very quiet.
It's been that bad. Huh? Oh, no.
So, Kim, you're obviously you are on the ground, your feet are on the ground, you're talking to people, you're dealing with care, right? If people don't know, and they should by now, but why don't you say to everyone what your role is, what you do exactly?
Sure. So my official title is an aging life care manager. More commonly known, or not commonly known maybe, is a geriatric care manager. That was the old term that we used. For some reason, the word geriatric, I know. And every time I say that, Dave is like, but you just don't look that old.
It's the best joke going. Sorry.
Right. in my role at the firm, and I love the daily it changes, right?
Right.
You know, I have a couple of main roles. One is to help our clients that are working on a Medicaid plan to identify the most appropriate plan that's available to them. And then even more so in the bigger picture, help them navigate through that, because we think Medicaid is a challenge to, you know, and it's not a challenge to get on per se. It's just the documentation, everything that you have to gather, you know, right, in order to qualify. The bigger challenge is actually figuring out which plan is the most appropriate once you're on Medicaid, and then sort of navigating through that, choosing the right, you know, the right providers, understanding, you know, if you live in a particular area, what maybe the lack of providers will mean to you, and how do we get around that, and how do we help plan for that, and all those kind of things. So that's where I step in and really, you know, try to be as, you know, present with clients as we can to get them through that process, because it can be very challenging. It's you know, because there's so many moving parts to it. It's not just like, boom, I'm on Medicaid, somebody shows up at my door to provide my loved one the care that they need the next day. It's unfortunately not the way it works.
Sometimes we make it seem that way too, and we have been very careful, especially in the last year, as to the expectations, because it is a process. And while we can, you know, look, today is leap day, right? Yep. It's February 29th. If you were able to go to the bank right now and get some certified bank checks that removed money from your accounts, and if you were able to sign a deed that I threw in front of you, I could get you qualified financially for community Medicaid by tomorrow. Okay, that's how fast it could happen, by the first day of the next month. So that's a rather extreme example. And there have been a couple of times where we've kind of ran around to do something like that.
Right.
But that's a lot different, right, than actually getting care.
Right.
So Absolutely. We submit, you're eligible. It's still going to be a couple of weeks, if not a month, until we file the application. We have all our ducks in a row that we need for that part.
Right.
And then call it a couple of weeks later, you're approved. Again, even then, there isn't someone knocking on the door.
Right, right. I mean, that's when the
then the wheels are
that's
turning.
When the wheels are turning, and that's when the real process starts. And so, you know, a lot of what we're trying to do is even once, I mean, so I work really closely with Mike, Jess, and Karen, who are our paralegals that do the Medicaid applications, and, you know, kind of in constant contact with them so that when they file the application, that's when I know to reach out and contact the client to talk to them about, okay, now we start triggering some things that we can kind of do on the backside to help alleviate some of the time that would go by, some of the, you know, painful process. 'Cause families, generally when they get to us and they are applying, it's because there's been an event, or they're so burned out they can't do it anymore. So then when you present them with, okay, now you have to do all of this extra stuff, like they just don't have the capacity to do it. And that's kind of what we're there for, is to really help kind of coach them through those next steps. And it's an important piece, because it's even hard for us sometimes. And as, you know, Debbie and I met with a client earlier this week, and he had heard about the Medicaid. He lives in Salem with his wife. His wife has probably got moderate stage dementia. I haven't met her, but from the way he describes her, she can't be left alone. But she's physically okay. She, you know, you tell her to brush her teeth, she brushes her teeth. You tell her to take a shower, she takes a shower. But she wouldn't do any of those things unless she had somebody guiding her through that process.
Right.
They live in Salem, Washington County, Vermont border. It's pretty rural. So one of the things, you know, we were talking about even before he kind of signed on was, is it viable to think that we can get any kind of service out there for her? And so one of the things that I mentioned from the get-go was a day program, you know, because home care can happen in many ways.
Right.
And a lot of times folks don't think about a day program being considered a part of a home care plan, right?
Yeah, like, you know, for sometimes in estate planning there are these words that are used, and it unless people know that that it's actually bigger than that word, they kind of get, you know, my home isn't okay for right. care. Well, home is like defined by what it's not.
Correct.
Right? It's not assisted living. It's not a nursing home. Pretty much anything else can be home. And in terms of the care, there are great programs where literally the point of the program is to get someone out of the home.
Right.
During the whole, you know, the whole day.
Right. And one of the, I mean, so I had a list of questions that I went through with him. I said, so, you know, you live in Salem. How long have you been there? And he came with his sister.
Mm-hmm.
His sister is his main support. She works full time, you know, kind of the same scenario we hit up. So his main support, but she works full time. He has a large piece of property. It's a Christmas tree farm. So it requires a lot of an attendance from him. Right. Not now necessarily, but come spring, he's going to need to be out trimming trees and stuff like that. And he's concerned about leaving his wife alone in the home. So a lot of the questions I was asking him was about his support network. I mean, do they have friends, family? Do they go to church? You know, looking to tap into some of those informal resources that are there to kind of identify, are those possible resources that we can then turn into formal resources once we get Medicaid.
Now,
right?
Now I know why you're doing that. It's because when there's a community of people who could help, and there's ready, willing, and able caregivers, when someone lives in the further reaches of the North Country or something like that, the parts of the community Medicaid program that are going to work best are probably where they have identified caregivers ready, willing, and able,
yep.
as opposed to trying to find some
agency.
In Salem
right.
or in Warrensburg.
It's not going to work.
Right.
And so that's one of the things that I really want families to understand. And that's why I was saying to him that the day program was so nice, because 5 days a week, she'll get picked up by a bus. She'll go to the day program. She'll be socially engaged. They'll feed her. They'll give her her medications if she needs to, you know, if it's a medical model versus a social model, she'll be able to get a shower, you know, personal care, all those. So she'll have all of those things taken care of. And then the bus will drop her back off later in the afternoon. And so that kind of eliminates an immediate need right there.
Right.
You know, if we can, and as soon as we get somebody qualified on day program or Medicaid, we can utilize a day program. So for a lot of caregivers who are in those throes of, I can't do this anymore, that's something that we can instantaneously kind of put in place while we're working on the bigger plan of caregivers,
right.
getting them vetted if we need to, you know, getting the agency out there to do the intake, getting a plan written depending on what home care program that we're utilizing. At least they can get something.
Also, Kim, hold that thought, because
okay.
I have questions, I have comments, I have follow-up questions and follow-up comments. We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Good morning. I'm Dave Kabikian.
And I'm Kim Hance.
Kim and I are from the Herzog Law Firm. We're here every weekend talking about estate planning, elder law, Medicaid planning, wills, trusts, powers of attorney, answering your questions, if you have any, by calling 518-476-5900. And when Kim's here, just about every time, we're going to focus on Kim's expertise, because she's so darn good at it, and it's infuriating sometimes how good you are at it. You were talking about a fact pattern that we see a lot, right? There's a need for care at home, there's a spouse who can't just do it all and manage some sort of work because they're young enough to still work or need to work or mm-hmm. money, right? And sometimes you're going to take advantage of programs that get the applicant out of the house, like your day program you were talking about. Other times it's just to keep things at bay for a moment until we figure out a real good plan for home. Right. And one of the things I was talking about at the seminars I did this past week, I was talking about how the reason you do a trust instead of a will, your motivation isn't, it's not for you. Like you, the client who's doing the trust, will never really see the true benefit of that document.
Right.
You will have passed away, and that document will have hopefully led to your estate avoiding probate and there being a lot more money for your kids, grandkids, charities, friends, whoever, because you did a Medicaid trust, and when you needed the long-term care, you were able to utilize programs that were made for you so that they're paying for the care involved as opposed to you, right? It's a means to an end. And when we talk about, well, you spend, you know, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 on doing a plan that involves trusts, or you could spend hundreds that deal with just a will, the difference, you're not going to see that difference. Your life really isn't going to be too much different, right? Obviously, if we have a really big long-term care situation, you may go through your assets and certainly your life will be different. But eventually you'll qualify for the programs that we're kind of getting you qualified for anyway. And when you were talking, it just kind of hit me. I think I knew this before, but maybe I forgot it. So much of the care at home is not for the person who needs the care. It's for the spouse.
Oh, it's for the caregiver.
My goodness. And I mean, I've literally written an article about the caregiver. But what I mean is, like, so much of the time I'm focused on, I wonder what program this person will qualify for. But whatever it is, even if it's a little bit, just for him to be able to have 4 hours during the day.
Right.
Where he could either catch up on sleep, because we know the evenings are going to be a bear, or to deal with his business. That's what it's kind of all about. And at some point, it's sad to say, but at some point, his wife won't really know the difference on where she is and what's going on.
Right. And, you know, people, you know, I get faced with this all the time. It's like, well, I promised I would never put them into a nursing home. Number one, never make that promise, because you don't know what the future holds. And not every single nursing home is horrible. I mean, obviously, none of us ever want to end up there.
There are a lot of good, let's put it differently. You know, and there are a lot of really good ones.
Well, and they serve a purpose. I mean, if you know, if there's someone that they require acute level of care, I mean, sometimes we just, you know, I'm just going through this with a client right now that we, you know, husband and wife, we got the Medicaid for the husband because he was the primary need because of his physical needs. Wife had dementia, but she was doing fairly, because we had supervision in the house, she was doing okay. Obviously, they weren't doing okay, the two of them alone. But he was the one who really needed the physical care. Mentally, he was intact. So we went through the process, got him Medicaid. He, you know, way back in the beginning, and I said I will probably use this couple for a scenario every time, because, you know, I got involved because a friend of mine was working on trying to help with placement, mm-hmm. and it was just obvious it wasn't going to work, and then the hospital was literally getting ready to ship them out to the nursing home. And because they needed to get out of the hospital, and unbeknownst to the client or family, wife had been admitted to the hospital, but it was a social admit, and a social admit to a hospital is about $1,500 a day. Nobody understood that was what was going on. So, you know, my colleague calls and says, "I've got this really tough, you know, let's kind of figure it out together what we can do." So, and this is what a lot of us as professionals do as well. When we have a tough case, you know, there might be two or three of us that kind of work together to collaborate. And that's what I really love about this profession, is the ability to kind of pick up the phone and pick other folks' brains to say, okay, this is the piece I'm missing. What do you think? You know, so as a care manager, that's kind of my job. It's to look at, I'm not looking at one piece of the puzzle. I'm looking at all of them, and I'm kind of spreading them out on the table, and then slowly trying to put the pieces back together to kind of make it a whole plan again. And sometimes there are bumps, right? Sometimes there's that either one piece that you can't figure out where it fits, or you get almost done with a puzzle and then you realize you're missing two pieces, right? So
but it's not a puzzle. It's not like a traditional puzzle. It's not a puzzle because the picture changes.
Well, it
all
does.
The time.
Right. But you know, initially when you're working with them, you're trying to figure out where all of those pieces fit and where are the different areas that you can kind of enhance. So when I'm working with somebody, I'm not looking at just the care piece. I'm looking at, can the caregiver get some education, right? Are some of the issues that are being caused, you know, with behaviors or with, you know, stress or things like that. So let's hook them up with the Alzheimer's Association to get into a caregiver support group. Let's do some education programs.
Well, Kim, it's not like respite care. It's not, hey, I need a little bit of help next week for a day. This is long-term care.
Right.
For the success of a long-term care plan, I'm going to Captain Obvious here, we need to plan for the long term. We need to educate people for the long term. We need to prepare them. They also need to understand that a lot of times this is very tough, that right now I can deal with it is not a long-term care solution.
Correct.
We get that all the time, and I understand that it, you know, we're throwing big words and big concepts and we're saying, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do this, 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 and this. You're going to qualify now. Then they're going to come in. Kim's going to talk to you. There's going to be someone who's going to evaluate your loved one. And then they're going to determine out, like, we're going through, because we do this every day. And they're saying, well, I could handle it now.
Right.
We'll call you back when we can't. And we're trying to say, well, look, 6 months from now, 5 months from now, in best case, maybe 3 or 4 best case, you're not going to see a benefit from this plan until then.
Right.
And you know, we can see the future. We know which direction this all goes in. I've seen it with family members, with my wife's family members, where it was so obvious that there was something going on. And they were so proud they didn't want to talk about it. Right.
Right.
Nothing wrong.
Right.
And I mean, I totally get it. I've lived through it. I understand it entirely. And our job is just to educate people and say, like, look, there's a solution and there's a truly long-term solution out there. Now, I got a question for you. We got about 20 minutes left, and I know we're going to talk about a lot of other things. I want to get this out. So I would assume the most difficult part of your job is where people are, yeah, home care, let's do it. I'm all in. Everything to keep my mom home, my spouse home. And then you, based on your experience, what they're dealing with, maybe the home, maybe the inavailability of caregivers, you're telling them home ain't going to work.
Yeah.
Tell me about how that is, because I can't imagine.
Well, I mean, and to the point, this couple that I was just talking about, you know, we cared for the husband 24-hour care via Medicaid until the end. So he was able to pass away at home. That was his goal. Now we have wife, and it's been a struggle because we're applying for Medicaid for her. I want the caregivers to stay on, but there are challenges to that. Because of the differences of the Medicaid programs, she's eligible for both, but she's not going to get as much coverage through one as she is the other, right? So there are a lot of nuances and a lot of differences. And some of the caregivers were like, I'm not interested in participating in that.
Mm-hmm.
So ultimately, at the end of the day, with the granddaughter who we just went through guardianship with, you know, I suggested to her that maybe we need to look at assisted living because she can't be left alone. She really requires, she loves socialization. She loves, you know, and it was hard. But she's thriving. We did do an assisted living placement and she's thriving.
That's
in that
great
environment. And just to your point, she's at the point now where she doesn't really know where she is. So the actual physical location isn't important.
Right.
The care that she's receiving is what is important. And, you know, one of the other things with the community Medicaid program is there are quite a few, and I just, you know, I updated and sent you guys the list, like week before last, of all of the, you know, we often say there aren't Medicaid assisted living facilities. There are. There are actually within a 50-mile radius here, within an easy drive, there are quite a few that we can kind of incorporate into our plan if we need to, whether it's from a respite standpoint, if a family needs to go on vacation, whether it's someone living alone, and while we are trying to work out the home care plan, maybe we temporarily go to the assisted living while we're putting together a home care plan because that person can't be alone. So those are the things, too, that make us unique when we're doing this, because we are looking at the big picture. We are looking at, you know, what's going to keep this person safe for the long haul. And yes, home care may be the answer now, but we may want to transition to a different environment at some point down the road, because life happens. And as we know, I mean, half of our office was out this past week, right?
Yes.
In Albany.
I noticed that.
So,
it was very noticeable.
So what happens to somebody who is alone, who's relying on caregiving staff 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to show up, and your main caregiver that provides 40 hours a week of care gets sick? Like, what do we do?
Yeah.
Right? So we always have to have kind of that backup. And those are the things that we talk about, is we always have to, we have plan A, but we also have plan, you know,
D&E
X, Y, Z, because sometimes plan A through T don't work. So,
well, so we do that with our estate planning documents. We do that with our trusts, and we certainly do that with any long-term care plan. Now, you said a bunch of things, and I'm going to slow you down because
I get very excited when I talk about
you,
this.
You got a little excited. That's all right. You mentioned a couple things. Now, number one, with the client you were talking about, you said you were talking to granddaughter. You were saying it might be time for assisted living, and now client is thriving, grandma's. And you said the word guardianship.
Yep.
Did granddaughter have to do a guardianship for grandma?
Unfortunately, yes, because their estate planning documents
weren't done correctly
prior to us getting involved, right? And her level of dementia would not allow us to do a different power of attorney.
Yep.
So while her husband was alive, it was great because his power of attorney, he could make all of the decisions. But we knew going in that he would probably predecease her. So we've been planning for about 6 months prior to his death. And so he passed away about 6 weeks ago. But so we've been pre-planning since probably the beginning of the fall.
Right.
All of the things that we would need to do to incorporate a plan for her, anticipating
right.
that, you know, and again, I often think, and we've talked about this many times and in the various meetings we have together, like, what would people do if they didn't have, you know, there are a lot of firms who would have just done a power of attorney, done the basics planning and sent them on their way and to never be heard from again.
Right.
Well, but we've been active and involved and engaged, and we do that a lot with our clients. I mean,
we need to constantly maintain. So at if she had her capacity, we could have had her do a new power of attorney,
right?
That would have gotten someone involved. The guardianship was, I don't have the books in front of me, but I would just assume from experience that's probably a 5-figure process,
right?
Over $10,000 process, because there wasn't an updated power of attorney. A couple other things you mentioned, Kim. You talked about assisted living. So, assisted living, there are a couple special places, let's call them special places, where they do have some beds that Medicaid will pay for. But I want to be clear, the rules that we're talking about for Medicaid are actually the home care rules. So, this is a huge benefit if that's the type of facility that you end up in. Because,
right.
as we talk about all the time, for community Medicaid, for quote-unquote home care, which you can get in a couple certain assisted living facilities, there's no look-back period.
Correct.
I can get everyone right now listening, if we all met some at a Starbucks or something like that, I get you qualified for tomorrow financially in some instances, right? I don't have to plan for 5 years from tomorrow. It could be tomorrow. It could be next month,
right.
2 months from now, six
right.
months from now. So there are more around than there were a year ago. I know that, two year ago, maybe. And so that's an option. But let's just assume that the assisted living doesn't, because most don't have
right.
Medicaid beds. Why, you know, we always talk about Medicaid and Medicaid trusts, and now Kim Hance on the radio is talking about, well, I'm recommending assisted living. It's because money isn't the whole answer to everything. The goal isn't saving the most amount of dollars ever. Our goal with estate planning is you keep your control. We avoid probate if we can. We have your plan intact, and then we look at ways to save money. All things are equal, then we look to save money. On the long-term care part, it's what's the right appropriate amount of care.
Right.
Now, if Kim said, look, I think it's assisted living right now, but in 2 months it's going to be nursing home, Kim wouldn't recommend assisted living for 2 months because that transition and then another...
It's too hard.
Right. But every plan is different, and most of the time assisted living, you are going to private pay for it. You're going to have some pain involved. It's not as bad as a nursing home, right, in terms of the cost. But you know what? That's the appropriate amount of care. We don't want to, for financial reasons, ever squeeze anyone and pressure anyone to go into a nursing home.
Right.
No. Well, all my money.
And in this circumstance, there was a retirement benefit with long-term care insurance that pays like, you know, $80 a day for assisted living and her income that she's receiving. So between...
It's getting close.
Yeah. There's about a $200 a month deficit.
Yeah.
And... they were spending way more than that in just managing and running a household. So there were concerns that what resources were left were not going to even last with 24-hour, you know, care paid for via Medicaid because of the home expenses, you know, and that's what people don't. And that's, again, where we look at the big picture and we say, you know, long term.
Yeah.
This may not be the most appropriate plan because, you know, between either planning for people to be sick and then who's going to plow the driveway and who's going to make sure that the sidewalk is shoveled so that it's safe to get out. And if there's a leak in the roof, because we know that happens come March, April, when things start to melt around here, like who is in charge of fixing those things and how is it going to get paid for? So, you know, we extend that picture and we don't just say, okay, yay, 24-hour care, send you on your merry way. You know, we are looking at all of these other kind of ancillary things that come along with having someone at home.
I could tell you like what you do and when you say each day is different because there's so many moving parts for every fact pattern and then the fact pattern changes. And, you know, we're motivated, like, ideally... for clients that say, well, I told my wife that, she would age here and that she's never going to be in a nursing home.
Right.
When those conversations are happening, I say, all right, well, if it looks like a long-term option is home, let's go for it.
Right.
And if that turns into home is not an option anymore, let's be smart about what transition there is. Let's not have a temporary transition because we know that's going to be a big deal. That transition is going to be you know what? Did you ever change schools when you were younger, Kim?
Yeah, a couple times, actually.
Okay. So how was that first day in the new school? This is when you have your wits about you. You have your capacity. You're brightest. And
right? It was terrible.
Now imagine
terrible.
if the what you're comfortable with and what you know is your home. Right. I bet that in the middle of the night, you could probably make your way down to your kitchen and back up to the bed with not a light on. Right.
Right. With your eyes. Closed.
Right. Yeah. Now, imagine if you are now in a different facility. Every face is a new face.
Yeah.
The walls are different. The doors are different. Like that confusion. And that's going to happen later on in life.
Yeah.
And we've had clients. We've talked about it before on the radio, actually, I think. Where their plan is to be assisted living, to then move to a different assisted living when the other one's ready, and then maybe a nurse. And I'm like, three transitions. What are we doing? But that's kind of what it's akin to. Is go ahead, change your schools, and I'm not. I don't care about your social component anymore. But I want you to be able to, like, have the will to live and be the best that you can be. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, but I mean, and to your point, you know, we work with lots of folks who have been in the same environment for 50 plus years because they grew up in a house and then they inherited it from their parents. So they've kind of just stayed put. And so that place is very familiar to them. And in those circumstances, and in even other circumstances, you know, making it work and trying to figure out a plan. But earlier you were talking about not so much the care for the actual person that has the diagnosis, but it's the caregiver.
Yeah.
You know, and you were mentioning to me as we were walking in, one of our clients that we actually, what, the Medicaid, it was probably when I first started working for the firm. So it's been 2+ years that he already had Medicaid in place, but he needed help kind of enhancing it and massaging a little bit. So when I first started working for the firm, I kind of helped with that, kind of helped introduce him to some other options that were out there under Medicaid. He's had a plan that's worked. And he's gone back and forth a couple times about whether or not, you know, his wife would go out because she had younger early onset. Mm-hmm. So, you know, kind of the triple crown, if you will, of, you know, a dementia diagnosis is bad enough, but then you get early onset. So early is in the very beginning stages, and she was under the age of 65 at the time. So generally speaking, that it's very challenging. And he had a full-blown practice that he was, you know, working,
a business,
you know, not looking at retirement anytime soon. So really important. And you were saying to me, he was just, you know, just took a vacation to Jamaica.
2 weeks in Jamaica.
Which is pretty incredible.
I mean, when we were talking the other day and he told me that, I said, oh, that's great that you were able to get away. And then he added, the icing on the cake was she went with him. Like, I thought went away.
Right.
Because there's care at home. And we get that a lot. We get a lot of clients who say, you know, we had a client down in Kingston who enjoyed New Year's for the first time in a bunch of years because she didn't have to stay at home with her husband who really needs a lot of care.
Right.
And, you know, got her hair done and the whole thing and just, like, felt like a human again, right?
Yeah.
And for her, like, that was whatever's important to her, man, that makes us so happy.
Right.
And for him, they went with the caregiver. The caregiver that
went with
them,
right.
That they've, you know, been accustomed to.
Yep.
And it's not like Medicaid's going to pay for the caregiver necessarily providing services in Jamaica. But that's great that it built these relationships that now they're able to travel a little bit and take advantage
and
of care.
That. Right.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, you figure out ways. You figure out ways to make it work, right? And, you know, there are some times where you get creative, and I often say that it might drive some people crazy, but one of my strong suits is that I color outside the lines. You know, don't always follow. My thing is, and one of your expressions that I really love is you're going to poke holes all in it to see if it's going to work or not, right?
Yeah, whenever I tell Kim we have this client, here's what the plan is, it's poke holes in it, and it's vice versa. The whole point is let's challenge each other and try to see what's wrong with this, because Kim, you're going to get excited, and you're going to say, I came up with this plan, and I sure as heck am going to be the same way. I can't. Listen, we have a couple in Columbia County that's getting married. They're going to be married because it's going to take advantage of rules. Plus, he was trying to get married for 25 years, and she kept saying no. But it just so happens that their lives are intertwined, their finances, and we can save them a boatload of money when they get married.
Right.
How wonderful.
But most people think you have to get divorced.
Right. Well, I've done both for clients.
Right.
But the point is we're going to come up with a novel plan, a custom plan, and we're darn excited about it, too.
Yeah. I think the hard thing for me is when I get a phone call from somebody who's worked either with another firm or even an agency, because there are a lot of agencies that will provide assistance, you know, for Medicaid. And they get to a certain point and it comes to a screeching halt because their fact pattern isn't going to work with whatever plan was set up for them. And that's super hard, right? Because we're doing a lot of backpedaling and a lot of undoing of things that could have saved lots of money, lots of time, only to either start over or to try to fix a lot of things that sometimes are a challenge to fix. And
we like it when we get the first stab because I think we're right just about all the time. Facts obviously change, but we're able to. And look, it's because of Kim. It's because of Mike and Jessica and Karen, people who most of you will never, ever meet. I hope you never have to meet them, right? But they're so darn good and we're able to take a home application And, you know, the last year and a half has been home care, and quickly turned that into a nursing home application.
Right.
Or vice versa. We've had it go the other way.
We've had actually recently quite a few of those who were
it was pretty cool.
Told that it was going to be nursing home, and suddenly we kind of are like, I don't think so. I think we could actually make a home care plan work and have been able to transition. And we're working with a client right now who, you know, husband was on community Medicaid. He then transitioned to nursing home. Wife had a heart attack, you know, had some brain issues, has been in the nursing home for a year, and she has come back 100%. They thought that she never would. So now we're working on, can we bring her out of the nursing home? Because they gave up their apartment. They gave up everything. And so...
Well, so the thing, Kim, is that people will be told, they'll be told at the hospital, they'll be told by a discharge manager, they'll be told by the rehab, you can't go home.
Right.
But the full sentence is, you can't go home and be on your own.
Right.
Everyone can go home with the right amount of care. Sometimes the house won't allow it. Sometimes the location won't allow it. And that's where you step in.
Right.
But we start with the idea, everyone can go home, prove us wrong.
Right.
And then sometimes we cross that off the list sometimes.
Right. Right. Well, and it's asking the questions. You know,
sure.
Why do you feel that they can't go home, sort of thing? And then providing the information that otherwise changes that opinion. So
have a great weekend.
Happy Leap Day.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.